Glad you could join us midstream in this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Tomorrow, you want to join us as well. Of course, tomorrow, Politics Wednesday, we'll be joined by analysts Wayne Moyer of Grinnell College, Jim McCormick of Iowa State University. Did you hear on the last weekend, the Trump-bashing attorney Michael Avenatti came to Iowa to rev up Democrats and to test his waters for 2020. We'll talk about that also. This just out this morning, the defense resting in the Paul Manafort fraud trial after calling no witnesses. We'll ask Wayne and Jim what that might mean for the Russia probe tomorrow, Politics Wednesday, here on River to River. This half hour, we want to update on news surrounding Iowa's state voter ID law and then compare it to some new voting laws in other states, Ohio, Kansas, and Missouri. Iowa's new voter ID law has been discussed and argued over in Iowa's courts. Let's check in with Joyce Russell, IPR State House correspondent. Hi, Joyce. Joyce, are you there?
I am. Hello, Ben.
Now I hear you. Thanks for joining us. So bring us up to date. We had a lower court injunction, and the Iowa Supreme Court has been examining the new voter law here in Iowa, hearing arguments, and made a ruling?
Right. There's a group called the League of United Latin American Citizens who are suing over the voter ID law. They're focusing initially on the parts of the law that have to do primarily with absentee ballots. And they were able to get an injunction delaying enforcement of those absentee ballots by a lower court. The Supreme Court was asked to weigh in on this, and they affirmed one of the absentee ballot provisions. In effect, they said this one will stand, and that was the one that has to do with early voting. Traditionally, or at least for a number of years, Iowans have had 40 days ahead of an election to cast an absentee ballot. The new law shortens that to 29 days. And the critics of the law were challenging that, but the Supreme Court said, at least for now, that can stand. And then this case goes back to the district court for a full hearing on the merits.
Mm-hmm. What other provisions were in question here or are ruled on?
Well, there are two more absentee ballot provisions that the court agreed should be temporarily halted until this a full review of the case. One of those, which is very controversial, when this bill was passed, there was a lot of talk on this one, and that is when you submit an absentee ballot and there's any question about the signature on your ballot, the election official on the county level can throw that out. There's a lot of testimony about county election officials are not signature experts. They're not trained in that. And so the high court agreed that that should not be in effect for now. And the other one had to do, again, with information on the absentee ballot request form. I don't know if you vote absentee, but in the past, there wasn't too much involved in submitting a request for an absentee ballot.
Sure, but I have, and it's been easy in the past, right?
But the new law added one thing that you had to put your driver's license number if you are a licensed driver or have a non-operator's license, or you have to put this new number that you're getting if you don't have a driver's license and you apply to the state for this voter card. It has a four-digit number. So if you're applying for an absentee ballot, you have to put that four-digit number on there. And critics of this just say it's an unnecessary complication. Supporters say it's a way of verifying that you are who you are when you're requesting an absentee ballot. But at any rate, there was enough question about that that the court said, yeah, we're going to keep that temporarily halted until, again, we can have the lower court can have a full review on the merits of the case.
Mm-hmm. I see that the Secretary of State, Paul Pate, issued a statement saying he was disappointed in this split decision, but is looking forward to that full hearing of the case. Joyce Russell with us, IPR State House correspondent. Let's check out what's been happening regarding voter laws in a few other states to give some context to all the focus here in Iowa on our controversial voter ID law. Let's start with another battleground state. Let's go to Ohio. Karen Kossler is with us, State House Bureau Chief for Ohio Public Radio and Television. Hi, Karen. Nice you could join us.
Great to be here. Thanks.
Now, I understand that voter ID is not the focus of your controversy there with voting laws. It had been decided back in June, had to go to the Supreme Court of the U.S., didn't it?
Well, Ohio's absentee voter issues, we've had some of those as well. We had a period where we had a 35-day voter registration period, which overlapped with the first day of early voting. And so there was a period where you could register to vote and vote on the same day. That was eventually taken back, and now Ohio has a 30-day voter registration period. But we have no-fault absentee ballots, mm-hmm. meaning you can vote early without providing an excuse. In fact, you can request a ballot by mail. You can return it by mail. You can go to your Board of Elections and vote up until basically the day before Election Day. And so we have options that people who have supported this have said, plenty of options for people who want to vote. The U.S. Supreme Court decision was about taking voters off the rolls and whether people have a right to stay registered if they don't vote. And the case was basically dealing with Ohio's process of, if you don't vote for 2 years, you get a mailing saying you need to confirm your address. And if you don't confirm your address and you don't vote for the next 4 years, you are removed and you have to re-register because it's assumed that you've died or you've moved away or you're somehow an ineligible voter. And the U.S. Supreme Court upheld that, even though opponents had said this basically makes not voting the trigger to be removed from the voter rolls and that's not fair. Mm. But that's been upheld.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea there in Ohio how many potential voters this so purging of the voter rolls in this way might impact?
Well, I know that this fall, we're too close to the general election this fall for any voters to be removed under the Federal Voter Registration Act. So nobody's going to be removed. But afterwards, there's this backlog of it could be tens to maybe even hundreds of thousands of people who could be removed because there were no removals during the litigation process over this, which started back in 2016. So there could potentially be a lot of people who could be affected, but some things have changed here in Ohio now. The Secretary of State has said, who's running for lieutenant governor, by the way, has said that he wants to make some changes in terms of like when you go get your new driver's license, that if you're still at the same address as you have on your voter registration, well, that will confirm that. And so you'll be able to not have to get that mailing, not have to go vote, and still be a registered voter. The problem with a lot of this is people were showing up to vote and finding they'd been removed with no way to make up for that because the voting registration deadline had closed. And a lot of people were getting very frustrated at that.
And no provision for a provisional ballot if they were turned down?
Right. I mean, if you have moved, then your address does not match what's on your voter registration. Therefore, there's no way to tell where you should be voting, what congressional district you're voting in, for instance. You might have moved to a different congressional district. So some people would vote provisionally, but if their ID didn't match what their voter registration said, then their provisional ballot would not be counted.
Mm-hmm. Karen, stay with us there in Ohio. Let's also include Amy Jeffries, Kansas News Service editor at KCUR, as we look at what other states are dealing with in terms of new voting laws. Amy, welcome to the program.
Thanks. Good to be here.
What's at the top of the list when it comes to voter laws in Kansas at the moment?
For sure, the proof of citizenship requirement that has been struck down, it was struck down just in June by a federal judge, is still an issue and a point of debate and contention here in Kansas. It was something that was passed in 2011, went into effect in 2013, along with a photo ID law that you all maybe becoming familiar with there
right,
in Iowa.
Right.
But the proof of citizenship law has been a much bigger deal here in Kansas. It required, past tense being operative here, it required that voters who wanted to register for the first time do so and provide a passport, a birth certificate, something like that, that actually showed that they were citizens, rather than just checking the box, as many, many people now do at the DMV, saying, yeah, I'm a citizen, when you go and sign up for your driver's license and say, sure, I'll register to vote as well.
Mm-hmm. How did citizenship become the major point of contention here in Kansas when we look at other states that is not the focus.
So again, the citizenship rule came in at the same time that photo ID came in. Mm-hmm. So essentially, photo ID was in place a year earlier. But in terms of contentious elections and so forth here, it's the proof of citizenship law that has come into play the most. And also because the Secretary of State, Kris Kobach, has been pretty strict about trying to apply that rule. And in 2016, he suspended some 16,000 voters or more than that. The ACLU is now counting something in the range of 30,000 voters who at one point had their registrations suspended or canceled because they didn't provide this proof of citizenship document when they registered to vote. They just swore that they were citizens.
Mm-hmm. If you just joined us this half hour, we're checking in with a few other states in addition to Iowa where voting laws are also making news. You've just been listening to Amy Jeffries in Kansas. Karen Kessler is with us as well in Ohio. Our own Joyce Russell as well. You mentioned your Secretary of State, Kris Kobach, there, Amy. What's the latest on the Republican gubernatorial primary race making national headlines between the Kansas governor, Jeff Collier, and Kris Kobach? Is it still too close to call?
It is still too close to call, and you're pointing out one of the interesting things about this race. You have Kobach, who his name is a national name at this point. Governor Jeff Collier, not so much. They are two very different personalities in this race, and each one of them is claiming about 41% of the Republican primary vote right now. The county canvasses are ongoing and will be for the rest of this week. And at this point, the two are still only separated by a couple hundred votes.
Now, I assume, like in Iowa, the Kansas Secretary of State is in charge. One of his duties to be in charge of elections is Kris Kobach having a role in this very close vote count?
Well, he says he is not. He says he has acquiesced and deputized one of the other officials in his office, a guy named Eric Rucker, who is a deputy secretary of state there. So he is carrying on and receiving the votes from each of the counties. The Secretary of State Kobach also will point out that it is the counties that at this point are actually doing the counting themselves, and then the Secretary of State's office is receiving those numbers and adding them up.
Mm-hmm. Backing up to the citizenship question there in Kansas and the photo ID question, what are the thoughts you're hearing there in Kansas about how this might impact 2018? Of course, Ohio. I don't know if any of your congressional seats are possible competitive ones that the Democrats are looking to flip, and how might these laws impact that?
Well, I mean, we found out just last week that one of our congressional districts is a lot more competitive than I think a lot of people thought. We had a race here in the central Ohio area that has been drawn to favor Republicans, and it was a district that Donald Trump won by 11 points, and the Democrat almost won that election. Again, that was a special election, so it's different. It's a smaller voting crowd there, but that certainly has some Democrats very energized, some Republicans looking at it as well. And so, I think Ohio's always one of these states, though, like Iowa, where everybody's always looking. And so I think, voter laws in Ohio quite often get challenged, especially as we get closer to big elections. We've got a governor's race here, this time. So there's the potential for all sorts of things to happen.
Let's check in also with Missouri. Brian Ellison is with us, host of State House Blend Missouri at KCUR, also in Kansas City. Hi, Brian.
Good to be with you again.
We're eager to hear about voting laws in Missouri and what's been in the news there. What's going on?
Well, the big story along these lines is, as elsewhere, a photo voter ID requirement. This, you have to go back to 2016 for Missouri to have considered this. It passed in the legislature largely along party lines with the dominant Republican majorities in the House and Senate supporting it. The Democratic governor at the time, Jay Nixon, vetoed the bill, and they overrode the veto, and it became sent to the ballot a state constitutional amendment. In 2016, voters in Missouri passed a photo ID law 63% to 37%. It wasn't even close. Since then, it took a while to implement. It took effect in the middle of last year, but this is, of course, the first major election cycle where the requirements are in place. I live here in Kansas City, Missouri. Like all voters, I got a postcard that said right on it, photo ID is required to vote. This postcard is not sufficient identification to vote. That was the first time we'd seen that requirement. The problem is it's not exactly true. This law is very confusing. It does indeed require photo ID to vote, but there are many exceptions to the requirement. So, for example, if you show up at the polls, you don't have a driver's license or a passport with you, but you do have a utility bill, you can sign a statement that and still be allowed to vote. If you don't even have a utility bill, but you are a registered voter, you can cast a provisional ballot, and they'll check your signature later. So it's an interesting thing. It's a law that requires you to have a photo ID but lets you vote even if you don't have a voter ID or a photo ID. The implications of that, then, is that it tends to confuse voters. Certainly those who are critics of the law have alleged that it is deterring people from coming to the polls, people who would have been allowed to vote. In fact, there's even been a lawsuit filed on behalf of a 70-year-old woman named Mildred Gutierrez. It's actually been filed by a political action committee, who say that the law renders elections as less than fully free and open. Just reading a line from their lawsuit, for voters who are unable to navigate these new and unnecessary procedural hurdles, the path to casting an effective ballot is fraught with uncertainty and unwarranted threats of criminal penalties, referring there to the oath that people sign when they sign that statement. So we haven't heard the last of this in Missouri, but it is, in some people's minds, having an impact on voters.
Mm-hmm. And Brian, what are the thoughts there about competitive races in the 2018 midterms and how this controversy may impact that?
Well, it's hard to say, of course, but the race that everyone will be watching, of course, is the U.S. Senate election between incumbent Democratic Senator Claire McCaskill and the Missouri Attorney General Josh Hawley, who, incidentally, is one of those who have gone to court to defend Missouri's voter ID law in his role as Attorney General. It's expected to be a very close race. Claire McCaskill, often talked about as the most vulnerable Democrat in the Senate. Josh Hawley won in the 2016 elections with more Missouri votes statewide than any other official who was elected in that election. Having said that, he has not run, in many people's minds, the strongest campaign, and that's expected to be very close. It could come down, in theory, to a handful of votes, a few hundred or a few thousand votes, and if there are disputes over what kept people from voting or whether ballots were legally cast, that could have real implications.
Mm-hmm. And Brian Wright, Claire McCaskill's re-election would be a linchpin. The Democrats, they are seen as having a slim chance bringing back the Senate into their control. But without Claire McCaskill, that's pretty much out the window, isn't it?
Yeah, many would say absolutely. Her election, along with a handful of others, is seen as absolutely pivotal if the Democrats are to have any chance of taking control of the Senate.
Let's go back to Amy Jeffries there in Kansas. Tell us what you're watching in the future in regards to voting laws, how this story may develop there. We had the citizenship controversy there. You talked about a few minutes ago. Chris Kobach, the Secretary of State, in that primary race for governor. What is coming your way that you're watching?
Well, we are still, as you point out, awaiting the real result here of our gubernatorial primary for the Republican nomination. So that's first and foremost. But once we get past that, and hopefully we will, we're going to be looking ahead to fall elections. There are a couple of congressional seats here in both the sort of Topeka area in eastern Kansas and in the Kansas City metro that will be quite competitive and that have been circled by national campaign committees as ones to watch in terms of who ultimately comes out as having control of Congress. And so, you know, voter turnout and voter registration rates in those districts are going to matter. And I can tell you that through the registration deadline for these primary elections that have just occurred, there were now outdated, now invalidated by a federal court ruling and a court order or two, notices about how to register to vote. So there's still confusion out there about what you need to do to register and who's eligible to vote in which elections, and that could carry through to the fall. So we'll be watching that very closely.
Karen Kossler, to check in with you in Ohio, I understand voter registration, the major parties are trying to lasso all the registered voters they can, get those people registered properly, right?
Absolutely. And we found out in this 12th congressional district that I just mentioned, this special election that just happened last week, it was very, very close, even though it was a strongly Republican district. The Democrat was just killing it in early voting, getting Democratic voters mobilized. But then on election day, the Republicans got their voters out in slightly larger numbers. And so that's the kind of thing that Democrats and Republicans are both looking at with. I mentioned that we've got a governor's race. We've got a U.S. Senate race. The Democrats, Sherrod Brown, is seen as a likely winner there, but still, it's one of those races that people are going to be watching. And on the photo ID issue, what's interesting here in Ohio is we've talked about photo ID in terms of Republicans who dominate the state legislature, but it's actually been the Republican Secretary of State, John Husted, again, the Lieutenant Governor candidate, who has said that Ohio doesn't need voter ID. He's kind of broken with the Republican Party on that, saying that we've got other ways to prove people's identity without having to use the photo option.
Okay, Karen, we have to go. Karen Kossler, thank you for joining us from Ohio. Amy Jeffries of Kansas News Service in Kansas. Brian Ellison of the State House Blend, Missouri at KCUR. Thank you all for joining us. And of course, Joyce Russell, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ben.
Thanks.
River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.